Ravel's Introduction and Allegro. The players were the Melos Ensemble with harpist Ossian Ellis, a justly famous recording from 1961. It's 6 minutes to 11, and now a little later than usual, time on Radio 3 for World Roots. This week, Lucy Duran brings to an end a series of programmes that the World Roots team made whilst they were out and about, making the Music Planet series. That series went out in 2011 on Radio 3, and in 2009, Lucy Duran and the World Roots team found themselves in Kenya.
I'm in Nairobi, one of Africa's largest cities and the capital of Kenya. Later on, I'll be recording cattle raiding songs with the Maasai and flying up to the north of the country to meet the Samburu people, whose songs yearn for the rain they so desperately need. With me is the Nairobi-based music critic and journalist Emmanuel Mwendwa. And the first person he wanted me to meet was a rising star of the Kenyan music scene, Susanna Owiyo. Here she is, in session, on location for World Roots.
Anyango soma soma, put it in. Anyango put it in. Me and he put it in. Nyatini put it in. Anyango soma soma. Bidi elimu ni muhimu mungali mdogo chana soma enda shule soma kwa bidi elimu ni bora put it in anyango put it in mi ani put it in nyatini put it in anyango soma soma put it in. Me and he put it in, nothing he put it in, and young go so much so much. Hey, I. kalo he ahe, tuche kalo he ahe, igni sudo he ahe, eh ahe, eh ahe, talo kalo he ahe, tuche kalo he ahe, igni sudo he ahe.
This song, actually, when I was recording it in the studio, I had already named the song Put It In. But the moment I started playing it to a crowd, they gave it a name, Anyango. Of course, I'm singing about Anyango, but...
Who is Anyango?
Anyango is a young girl. And, you know, most of young girls are introduced to early marriages at a younger age. I believe each and every young girl deserves a right to live, you know.
Before getting married?
Before getting married. And you find that there are some communities whereby their parents look at them as a source of income. Let your girl get married to a rich guy, 50 years old, 60 years old. And this happens, up to date, is happening in some of the communities in Kenya. We have to pass the message. It has to be heard. And somehow, somewhere, there will be change.
Madeki paro jodala, madeki paro nyithindi, madeki paro meru, madeki paro woru, eh. Aya nyolowa,
olowa,
biriam bolowa,
olowa,
erolowa,
olowa,
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 aya nyolowa,
olowa,
biriam bolowa,
olowa,
erolowa,
olowa,
olowa,
olowa.
Many of Susanna Owiyo's songs deal with the social, economic, and political problems that Kenya struggles with. In this song, she warns her fans about the dangers of excessive alcohol consumption. Susanna's making a real name for herself in Kenya, and as well as raising the profile of important issues, she's also raising the profile of one of the region's most important and oldest traditional instruments, the nyetiti. She started learning it herself in 2009, and her teacher is Kenya's foremost master of the nyetiti. Susanna brought Joseph Nyamungu along to her World Roots session in Nairobi. She and my guide, the journalist Emmanuel Mwendwa, explained who Joseph was and why he's so important.
Joseph Nyamungu has actually been playing the nyetiti for the last more than 40 years. He started out way back when he was given the skills by his grandfather. In the Luo community, you just don't learn the nyetiti. It's like a tradition. It has to be handed over to you from one generation to another. So that's how he started to play the nyetiti. He could not go to school. His parents decided that he should complete school, but his grandfather thought that since he wanted to be a nyetiti player, he had to drop out of school to concentrate on the art. And now today he's one of the greatest nyatiti players in this country.
He's an old musician, you know. I'm just worried that in the near future we not have people like him and especially the Nyatiti, that is a Luo instrument. We are all hooked up with the Western music, trying to forget our culture. I remember when I was starting my music, I used to see Nyamungu playing at the Kenya National Theatre under a tree. I totally wasn't interested in the instrument, but after watching a Japanese woman whom he taught on the news, I'm like, this woman came all the way from Japan and can play this instrument so well, and this is our instrument. I took it positively. You know, Nyatiti is not a female instrument. Women used not to even move close to the Nyatiti. For me, I mean, an instrument is an instrument, because I know what a man can do, a woman can do it better. And I'm saying I want to go back to the roots. I want to know more about my roots, where I came from, try to understand this instrument.
Well, tell me about your roots.
I'm Luo, born in the western parts of Kenya, next to the Lake Victoria. Luo's more into fishing and also the music, especially the music industry in Kenya. Quite a number of artists from Luo have done so well in the Kenyan music industry. Whatever genre of music you find, there's a Luo inside there. So it's a musical community, I would say, yeah.
Emmanuel Mwenda, in the 1970s, Benga, the popular music of the Luo people,
yeah,
around Lake Victoria here in Kenya, that was the really popular, the dominant sound of a lot of East Africa. It even got as far as West Africa, Benga,
yeah,
music.
It's not just in the 70s. It goes back, I think, up to the 50s. And then over the 70s is when it became prominent. And a lot of other people picked it up from there. Actually, Kenya was sort of a musical mecca of some sort, because we had musicians coming from Rhodesia, modern-day Zimbabwe. We had musicians coming from Congo as well, and they were based in Kenya. So Benga rose to fame in the 70s, but it has been around since the late 50s.
And this instrument, the Nyatiti, the lyre, yeah, of the Luo people, is at the root, or one of the roots of that music?
Not one of the roots. It's actually the roots of Benga. What happened is that a lot of musicians wanted to sort of create the fusion. They wanted to use the modern instruments. And although the guitar came in after the Second World War into Kenya, it was not easy for them to play their own chords from using the guitar. So they had to borrow from the Nyatiti to create what we today know as Benga music.
Na galo lupinyo dagu tianwangu lupinyo.
That's the playing and singing of one of Kenya's best traditional musicians, Joseph Nyamungu. He's a master of the Nyatiti, an eight-string lyre. And I asked him about this instrument.
Mwaka mingi sana, miambili na. Manake babu yangu na babu yangu ya tano nimepata nyatiti kwa familia yetu.
He says the nyatiti has been in their family for what he estimates to be almost 200 years because it has been handed over from his great-grandfather, from his grandfather to his father to him now. So for him it's about 200 years in the family.
Mimi nimeanza nyatiti kama anaona babu yangu na chonga.
He says he was inspired to play the nyatiti when he saw his grandfather make the nyatiti, the instruments, because he was, besides being a player, he also used to make the nyatiti, carving them from the wood. So he started playing the nyatiti when he was 10 years old. And up to now, 40 years later, he's still playing the nyatiti.
What about the ring on your toe, which thumps the side of the nyatiti? Is that always a part of the instrument?
So he says the nyatiti traditionally is like an ensemble. It's like a whole band. You can strum the strings, and then the metal ring is supposed to be like the drum kick. One nyatiti player can actually entertain a gathering as a band would.
And what kinds of things are you singing about?
Yangu.
Yeah.
Yangu.
His music deals a lot with things he sees on everyday situations. He composes songs about death, about love, about relationships, you know, about the family.
Death,
you know. So for him, he sees himself as a social commentator of some sort.
Would you say that the Nyatiti is doing well? Is it appreciated by people here in Kenya?
Sasa kwa Kenya mzima, sasa nyatiti hakuna kabila. Anasika kabila ya Kenya yote.
He says the popularity has actually blossomed. You know, it's not just a Luo instrument anymore. People appreciate it whenever he performs because he has performed in many places across the country. Just the way that he just performed as sort of a solo artist. In his view, it's no longer restricted to the Nyanza region, where it started from.
Joseph, the first song you sang translates as "The world has changed." Can you tell me about that one?
Dunia inabadilika. Manake inaangalia kitambo sisi Africa.
He says in the song, times have changed truly because traditionally, once you became an old man, there were certain taboos that you were supposed to respect. One is about interpersonal relationships. He says nowadays old people tend to move around with girls who are almost their daughters. So that's what he feels as a social commentator. He has to sing about it because nobody seems to talk about it anymore.
At the beginning of the song, you speak. You go into sort of a spoken recitation. What is that?
Iyo sasa, ile ya kwanza ni tuseme rap.
For him, it's like he's trying to accommodate the young people who are used to the rap kind of music, whereby people sort of rap first before they get into the singing version. For him, it's one way to bridge the gap because he's from the older, sort of old school, and he wants his music to appeal across the board. So when he sings that way, when he makes that sort of chant, at least young people will pay attention and then they will listen carefully to what he wants to sing about. Which otherwise, if he just started out with sort of trying to criticize their ways, they wouldn't pay attention.
That's the Nyatiti, the ancient lyre from the west of Kenya, played by Joseph Nyamungu. I was introduced to him in Nairobi by rising star of Kenyan music, Susanna Owiyo, who, as we were hearing, has been taking lessons with Joseph. When I met Susanna, she'd only been learning the Nyatiti for a few months, and I asked if she'd let us record her playing it. She agreed and decided to play another song with a strong message. I asked her what the song's title, Gonya, means.
Handouts. This happens especially in Africa, where politicians give handouts, especially when they are campaigning during election campaigns. And we've seen it on and on.
Like what do you mean, handouts?
Handouts. They give youth money in order to vote for them. After that, if you go to the same guy that you need a job, you even won't get access to his office. I think we need to create jobs for our youths. Handouts won't help. The reason why I called it Gonya, this is a phrase that is used in Kisumu. Our youths, they are those idlers. Let me just call them idlers because they have got nothing to do. So whenever they see a politician, they'll run to their car. And then all they need is Gonya. They use that word, Gonya, you know, like, can I have something? Give me. Gonya, they just need money. But money won't solve their problem. I think we need to look at it, especially the politicians, they need to look at it as at a long-term, I mean, in a long-term process, how they can help our youths.
These are songs that you've composed yourself, Susanna.
Yes, yeah.
Are they?
Yeah.
And it's obviously important for you to have a message in your songs to address particular problems and issues that are current here.
Yeah, and quite a number of my songs, I talk about issues, you know, especially what happens around me, what happens in the society, the issues affecting the society. People look up to me. I'm a musician. Whenever I want to talk about something, whenever I see a problem, there's a way I can put it to make people understand by giving people hope, by somebody somewhere listening to my song and taking action.
You're singing about things that people don't normally sing about,
but
that need to be addressed.
That's true.
That's the Kenyan musician Susanna Owiyo singing her song Gonya, accompanying herself on the Nyatiti, the lyre. That session was recorded specially for World Roots on location in Kenya's capital, Nairobi. Go to the World Roots homepage on the Radio 3 website and you'll see photos of our trip to Kenya. A World Roots trip to Kenya wouldn't be complete without recording the music of the Maasai people. portrayed as a proud, colourful and very tall people who jump high in the air and endlessly entertain tourists to Kenya, I was keen to see how they actually live. Teto Tutuma is a musician, radio presenter, entrepreneur and, above all, a contemporary young Maasai. He took me and my friend, the Kenyan journalist Emmanuel Mwendwa, to Kitengeli, a Maasai settlement about 50 miles outside Nairobi.
We are in the heartland of Maasai. We are at a homestead where we have this large family unit. By large, I mean, you know, different brothers married to several wives. They live together with their old man. Apparently, they're out in the works right now, so the women are left in the homestead to do their thing.
Teta, this isn't at all how I imagined Maasai land to be, I have to say.
Yes.
I mean, there are a lot of cement houses and certainly not open countryside.
Right.
But you were saying on the way down that actually Nairobi is Maasai land.
Indeed, Nairobi itself is Maasai land. But we have to understand that there's a lot of conflict going on, you know, in land issues and all. And right now, these people have started to believe that they're marginalized. So actually they're facing this problem. They're moving towards cities and towns because of the way it's becoming hard for them to live in the villages. The environment can no longer sustain their way of life. You know, the animals are getting little by the day, and then there's a very big drought right now. So most of them are actually feeding around the national park, and some actually as far as Thika.
But it's ironic because we've come here to hear the famed rain songs, the songs that bring down the rain, and yet it's raining as we've arrived. It is raining.
Possibly because they're going to sing the rain songs.
Oh, do you think so?
Yes.
And it's been very, very dry here.
Yes.
And hot. It was supposed to rain in August and it hasn't.
I believe that the Maasai have not been living their, you know, older ways of life like they used to. And actually that's, for me, causing, you know, the conflicts that they're going through, because many of them have, like, blended their culture with so much contemporary lifestyles. And, yes, it's actually becoming, you know, a challenge for them.
You say them, but you're a Maasai as well.
Yes, 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 us. You're right.
I've just been shown a CD of yours, or a CD with a recording of yours, where you're described as a rebel.
Exactly.
Rebelling also against traditional Maasai customs that you don't think are right.
In a way. And in the way this music is performed, because people have made it sort of like a cliché, you know, for you to be Maasai, you have to have staff around your neck, you have to jump when you sing. And yeah, and as much as I believe in that, I believe that there's a way that you can make it better and, you know, give it a larger appeal.
So we're going to hear some rain songs?
Yes, yes, we're going to hear some rain songs.
Let's do that. Wonderful. So that's three Maasai women singing a rain song for us.
Yes.
Wow. And what are they actually saying?
They're saying we need to have milk in this gourd. They're asking God to fill the gourd. Yeah, and like I have all these kids looking up to me. You know, it's you that I ask to provide. And I need something green. It's you I ask to provide, because these cows has to eat it. It's you I ask to provide. So
calling out to the ancestors, to God to provide rain, because rain translates to cattle, for pasture for cattle. Mm-hmm. Without the pasture, the cattle can't generate any milk.
Yeah, I believe
and,
so.
And the milk is for the children. So no milk, no food for the children.
Is that a real problem here then?
Yes, yes, it is.
But all around us are the pens where they keep the animals.
Yes, yes. Apparently the animals go very far because of, you know, the conflict in nature.
But it's quite an urban environment.
Yes.
Here.
Yes. Apparently.
And so dry. So
very
dry.
When you go interior now, you can find people. You can't find people.
You can't find people?
No, no. Actually, they were moving with little ones in donkeys and old women, you know, like those who can't walk. They are being carried on top of donkeys so they could get near to where there is increased human settlement, where they could, I don't know, get feeds for the animals and, you know, easily access markets for food as well.
Lots more people are gathering around us. Right. Tete, behind you.
Right.
So it must be a bit of a curiosity seeing
it
BBC
is, it
team.
It is, seeing white men and...
Coming, yeah. Well, I'm sure they see lots of white men, but I mean, it must be a bit of
probably
an oddity.
Not.
Really?
Not, yeah. Because I think this is off the beaten, the tourist path. So this is, it's not, as you mentioned about the urban element, but I think it's the urban people, or rather urban development, which is encroaching
into
the interior. Because there is very little space left up that side, so... People tend to buy land in these areas because it's probably cheaper than they would find in the more developed areas.
That's the voice of Emmanuel Mwendwa, who's a music critic and one of our guides here in Kenya. Emmanuel, is this music you've heard before, this kind of rain singing?
Apparently, they're not very common. They're not in the public domain anymore. Maybe they used to be there some time back, but not anymore. And just like Teto mentioned, it could be an element whereby they feel they don't need to record the music. And for you to get these kind of performances, you have to get out of the urban areas. And you can only find them in rural areas. This might not be so much of a rural area, but the communities are also moving away from rural areas to come into the fringes of the sort of civilization. Farming for them is not an option, and when there are no pastures, they have to come closer to the urban areas where they can find alternative sources of probably income.
Teto, I'd quite like to ask the women who've just been singing
about
the rain, because it's a curious fact that it's raining right now. The song that you just sang, which was calling down the rain.
Yes.
Do you feel that there's a connection between the rain that we're experiencing right now?
Absolutely.
And when was the last time that it rained here?
She's long time ago.
Really? But it's a very strange thing. I look up the clouds immediately above us, but there's loads of blue sky all around, so there's literally a rain cloud. Just falling on us.
It's called a dialect translation. It's called a bigger wing, they say.
And big wing.
Yeah, like Olobiro is a big wing. And they say that's what happens when some of these songs are sung.
Well, will you sing another song, another rain song, please, for us?
Yeah.
They're saying, I can't say it's late, and I can't say it's going to be long while I wait. So in the meantime, I'm waiting under this tree that it will happen.
What is it? The rain?
It, the rain, it, provision for my needs, you know. It's interesting, but they have to mention a little kid, they have to mention the cow, and they have to mention grass in each of these songs.
Teto, can I ask why it is that women sing the rain songs?
Okay, that's it.
She said what?
Yeah, women have more emotions. They can easily convince God more than men, she says.
What did he say?
He says that he would love that you listen to some for the men too.
I'm happy to listen to the men sing.
Okay.
Can we do it?
Can you do it?
Well, yeah.
Teto, you mentioned that they have raid songs,
yes.
Cattle raiding songs.
Yes.
Can you tell me about those songs? And why do they have cattle raiding songs?
Cattle raiding songs. Okay, they have these songs because sometimes it's things they understand that it's not right to do. It's things they understand that there are grave dangers involved. And it's things sometimes they do against the wishes of the older men. These are songs that are sung by, you know, the morans, you know, the young men. And these songs serve the purposes of giving them courage. They serve the purposes of, you know, numbing them, you know, to the reality.
I mean, cattle raiding is a sign of young prowess and virility.
Right. It's also a source of conflict with other communities, which older men apparently don't wish to be. So many times the old men castigate it, but the young men do it in any case. They still do it. So yeah, these songs help them to, you know, just like rebel.
Do you raid cattle? Have you had your own cattle raided?
Yeah, yeah. He says we have, but it's been a while. They say we have less and less energy, so we don't. That's why they no longer go to raid. They say there are much more stiffer challenges as well with that. So it's better to, you know, just be sedentary and hope that with your toil you can earn, because there are stiffer penalties if you are caught as well.
Ah, so it's more controlled nowadays than it used to be in the past?
Yes, yes, apparently.
But you won't be imprisoned if you sing the cattle raiding song, will you?
No, not really.
I'm
It's really fascinating. What's actually going on? You've joined in now, this group of young Maasai men.
Yes.
What's going on?
Yes, the song apparently is high energy and it excites memories. Yeah, they sing about, you know, the life in the plains, the adventure there is, and the things they love doing, you know.
Such as?
Chasing each other on the fields, you know, like spying, scouting, and yes, going after someone else's cows and apparently now being your own. You know, like when you take someone else's cows and now you're going with them, they are yours. Yes.
And what about the jumping, Teto?
The jumping.
You really jump high.
I do?
Well, all of you do. Yes. All of you do.
Yes. It's a different element of the performance in their music. Yes, they have different songs for different, I think, moods.
And is this to do with the Morans?
Yes.
So tell us exactly what the Morans are, who they are.
Morans, yeah. These are people caught between, you know, adolescent and being adults, and they are not married yet. Their role specifically being, you know, look after the community, look after cows, you know, look after the community security-wise, look after the cattle, you know, find pastures and water, and yes, eat meat and just be young men. Yes.
Are you a Moran?
I used to, apparently. I'm not anymore.
How do you decide? Is that why you cut off your dread?
Yes. Yes.
So you've been admitted into the world of adults. You're no longer able to be a Moran.
Yeah, and now I was allowed to get married, and it comes with a greater responsibility as well. You know, provision of food and all. Morans don't do that. Older men do. Yes.
Which one is more fun, Teto?
I think Moran is more fun, but I think it's much more, you know, fulfilling to be responsible. Yes.
But you still jump?
I still jump. I still dance. I still, you know, do this music. Yes.
Teto, with the grasslands disappearing, the cattle getting fewer and fewer, and the city encroaching increasingly on Maasai land.
Yes.
So what's the future of your people?
It's actually on a balance right now. And that's what we're trying to do, you know, just get back to the roots. If only we could preserve it for the future generation. First, we do it for fun. But secondly, we're trying to get into recording business now. We're trying to get into commercial performances as well, because in a way that will help them sustain their livelihoods and as well as help them be willing and proud to go on with their ways of life. We're in a small six-seater plane flying pretty much due north of Nairobi. We've left the congested streets and the pollution of Nairobi, the capital of Kenya. We've been flying over some very dramatic landscape. To our left, to the west, we've been
looking at the edge of the Rift Valley, the Great Rift Valley. And on our right is Africa's second tallest mountain and Kenya's tallest mountain, Mount Kenya. And my goodness, it's really incredible, towering above us at 17,000 feet. And we're heading towards a place where we've been promised to hear very, very special music. And the person who's taking me there is Emmanuel Mwendwa, who's a music critic here in Kenya. Emmanuel, where are we going?
We are going into the heartland of Samburu, Samburu community. It's one of the biggest communities in the country. Where we are going is a campsite called Kiltamani. Kiltamani is a sort of a nomadic campsite because Samburu are also nomadic in some way. When they used to have cattle, they would have to keep on moving from one place to another in search of pasture. So where they are right now is a campsite, which is sort of a temporary settlement because we've had issues about cattle rustling. So there's a little bit of insecurity. The problem has come up due to the fact that some of the herdsmen, they acquire guns illegally. Initially, they never used to have weapons. They would just raid, steal the cattle and go away. But where guns are involved, there's bound to be some bloodshed. So that's how it's become a security problem.
And what kind of music can we expect to hear, Emmanuel?
The kind of music we're going to listen to is predominantly sung by women. Their cultural, sort of traditional music is not in the public domain. So, of course, this is sort of a privilege to get to listen to this kind of music, which is not readily available anywhere. It's not on sale in music stores anywhere in the country.
So the only way we can get to hear it is by coming here?
Yeah, going literally into the heartland. Yeah, going into their own backyard.
Oh, yeah.
Emmanuel, it's such a wonderful sound, these women singing with this kind of harmony and polyphony interlocking. It's in this incredible location, and they seem to be welcoming us with this song. Do you know what they're actually saying?
Yeah, it's a sort of a Thanksgiving song, whereby they're showing their appreciation for the fact that we came all the way to come and listen to them sing this kind of songs. And so the song is called God Should Not Go to Sleep, which in Swahili is Mungu Asilale.
And why would they be saying that?
Because it's been almost over 14 months since the rains came this side of the country. So they feel that they cannot give up on their hope. You know, they cannot give up on their watch. They have to keep on hoping that at some point their prayers will come true.
Life must be incredibly difficult here if it hasn't rained for 14 months. That's why it's so dry. Hot and dry and dusty here.
They even used to be pastoralists traditionally, but with this kind of weather, they have to give up on keeping their cattle. They have to dispose of them. What you see around here is a goat pen. Those ones, at least some of them, are resistant to this kind of weather, but they had to give up the cattle as well.
There are a couple of men here in this sheltered spot in the middle of the homestead, in the middle of the Manyata. And this is Bakari. Bakari, tell me what life is like here.
Yeah.
How is life here?
Sio ngumu na ni rahisi tu. Lakini ni sheda kuna maji, kwa hivyo wanaishi kwa sheda tu, lakini ni kusuguma suguma tu maisha.
He says life here is not easy because, as you can see, water is a problem. So for them, they just have to try and struggle every day. The nearest water source is about 7 kilometers away. So sometimes the songs that women sing here, it's sort of to encourage them not to realize the distance as they walk back and forth looking for water. And sometimes they don't find any drop, not even a drop of water.
Bakari, what characterizes the Samburu people?
Yeah, tuko tofauti kwa Masai kwa sababu sasa venye umefaa namna hii.
So he says they are distinctly different from the Maasai, although there might be some similarities. Maybe you can notice their kind of attire that they wear. It's got all aspects of the beads. You know, we can see some sort of a belt, which is beaded as well, and can even see a mirror. The Samburu are very colorful, and they like admiring themselves. So everywhere you go, you'll find them, no matter where it is. You'll always find a mirror somewhere, so I'm actually surprised.
A mirror just hanging from the necklaces.
Yeah, from the necklaces or just somewhere handy.
The cloth is such brilliant colour as well, kind of brilliant kind of iridescent green and bright red and bright blue. And the rain songs, when do they sing the rain songs? How often are they doing these every day?
When they look around, they're encouraged to sing rain songs as often as they can, because the rains will come anytime, because they've been praying for so long. Yeah, so they are hopeful, and that's why they have to keep on singing the songs.
World Roots was presented by Lucy Duran and produced by James Parkin. And as Lucy was saying earlier on, you can see photos of the musicians recorded on location in Kenya on the World Roots page of the Radio 3 website.
On BBC One, Michael Palin explores a country he's never been to before.
Nothing less than the fifth largest country on Earth. A country blessed with a melting pot of peoples and an abundance of resources. A country that's risen almost out of nowhere to become a 21st century superpower. It's the host of the next World Cup and the next Olympic Games. How can I say I've seen the world when I haven't seen Brazil?
Brazil with Michael Palin starts this Wednesday night at 9 on BBC One and BBC One HD.
This is BBC Radio 3. It's coming up to 5 minutes to midnight. And now, as part of the BBC piano season, a special jazz lineup celebrating the 70th birthday of British jazz pianist John Taylor. It's introduced by Claire Martin.
Good evening from the Radio Theatre within BBC Broadcasting House in London. As part of the BBC piano season, Jazz Lineup this week presents one of the UK's foremost pianists, a man that perhaps has been the backbone of British jazz with his work with collaborations with Alan Skidmore in the late 60s, through Azimuth, we must mention that groundbreaking band, and his work with Jan Garbrick in the 80s, and his work in 2006 with Pally Danielson and Martin France. With the piano taking centre stage tonight, we put the instrument through its paces with what you might call the standard jazz quartet form, and contrasting that with the ever-evocative two pianos combination and the total contrasting colour of piano and tuba in duet. But we start tonight with the solo piano, and please give a very, very warm welcome to the birthday boy himself, the fantastic John Taylor playing Coniston. John Taylor!
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's such a pleasure to be here, to be invited here to play in this lovely place to you lovely people. And yes, I'm 70 years old now. It's great. Enough of that. The next piece I'm going to play is part of the same suite dedicated to the lakes, and this one is called Ambleside. Thank you.